The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's one thing for Michigan players to plant a flag at midfield in Columbus. It's completely another for Sherrone Moore to yell to the fans there at the horseshoe, "We own you!" Two very completely, utterly different situations. I don't mind the taunting, the gamesmanship. I don't get all fired up about it the way many do, but I know that the flag plant at midfield or center field is meant to incite this type of a reaction. What you're doing is essentially crossing the line that, let's say, when you run over the mound in baseball, right? Isn't that considered bush league? You don't do that. It's one of those unwritten rules. You do not plant your flag midfield of someone else's home stadium. And when you do, what you're asking for is some type of a brouhaha. What you're asking for is for the players on the other team to stand by and watch tepidly with their tails between their legs. That is not happening in a rivalry game. So, of course, the Wolverines knew exactly what was going to happen when they started waving their flag again. This demonstrative show, it's not as though they did it quietly and nobody noticed. No, they did it with as much fanfare and as much attention as they could muster beforehand. And so, of course, as the Ohio State players are coming on to remove that ugly flag that they hate, I'm not saying it's ugly. They think it's ugly. From midfield, this is what was going to happen. The pushing, the shoving, the frustration boils over, all of that. So Sherrone Moore, he was out there separating guys. We could see him on video. And Ryan Day, not quite the same thing. But I certainly get it. And just to use a different situation that unfolded this weekend and how some coaches handle it very differently or some players handle it differently. How about the Texans and the Jaguars and what happened with Trevor Lawrence and Azeez Al-Shaair? I don't know that I believe that this was a situation where he couldn't stop and he couldn't peel off, or it seemed like it was a late hit because you could tell that Trevor Lawrence was sliding. That's not always the case. Sometimes quarterbacks drop at the last second and it's almost impossible for a defensive player to slow his roll or to stop the tackling motion that he's already started. But in the case of Azeez, he had a forearm and he was leading with a forearm. Who tackles with a forearm? And so he was leading with a forearm. He gave a forearm shiver to the neck and the head of Trevor Lawrence, and you knew he was sliding. I mean, you could tell very clearly that he was sliding. So I agree that he needed to be ejected. It was egregious. It was unnecessary. It was grossly over the top. He has since apologized. But of course the Jaguars were going to come to the defense of their quarterback. If you don't, you're breaking the unwritten code in the NFL. You don't mess with our QB. Sometimes it can be a hard hit on the field that we wouldn't even all agree was a late hit or unnecessary roughness or roughing the passer. And yet offensive linemen come to the defense of their quarterback. Happens in hockey. You go after our star. Well, it used to be there were goons. I don't know that you're allowed to call them that anymore in hockey because it's probably against the rules. But unwritten rules, you don't mess with our best player. If you take aim at him, we will take aim at you. In Major League Baseball, you throw at our home run slugger, you go high and tight inside on our best hitter, well, you better watch out because there's some retaliation that's made to look like it's not retaliation with a pitcher that we can afford to sacrifice on the mound. This happens in sports all the time. Michigan was going, they were going for this effect. They were going for this exact reaction from Ohio State, and they got what they wanted. And it wasn't the only place where it happened. We saw it happen in multiple stadiums over the weekend because it's rivalry weekend, and this is when the tempers flare and when the emotions run hot. Whether it's men, whether it's women, you throw all of decorum out the window when it comes to rivalries, especially those that are as, I don't want to say lopsided, that's maybe not fair, but as one-sided as it's been with Michigan winning the last four, including the national championship under Jim Harbaugh. Well, and Sherrone Moore, right? Because last year he was actually coaching. Harbaugh was suspended for Ohio State, Michigan. And so it was Moore who was coaching and Moore who eventually got the job. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways to play this, the perspective. Fact is, when you talk about games like this and you talk about emotions like these, you know what to expect. No one's surprised that Ohio State went after Michigan for planting the flag or anywhere else that had happened. And there were multiple fights and brouhahas that broke out over the weekend. Same thing with the Jaguars. I think you would get a more critical reaction, that there would be more of a backlash against the Jaguars if they didn't defend Trevor Lawrence, if they didn't go after Aziz and essentially send the message that you can't get away with that, even though it cost ejections. And that's what we heard in the Jaguars locker room after that game on Sunday. There was one, I can't remember, was it Andrew Wingard? I think it was, who was talking about how they had a rookie who got ejected because he put him right in the middle. He put himself right in the middle of the fray, and he decided he was going to protect his quarterback. And they were cheering this rookie who just had his first ejection because he wouldn't stand for it. He wouldn't stand by while Trevor Lawrence was laying on the field concussed. So it is interesting to think about the different ways that coaches handle this. But I tell you, when you're Moore, fine, go out there and separate guys. When you're Ryan Day, well, you recognize this is exactly what Michigan wanted your guys to do. So as long as no one gets hurt, but sometimes guys do, right? I mean, sometimes guys end up with these freak injuries from different scrumbles, if you will, at midfield or on the mound or whatever else. But these are unwritten rules that you have to stand up for your teammates. And I've never had a problem with that. I don't think throwing punches is necessary, but the pushing, the shoving, the get your paws off my QB, how dare you, you want to go after our star, we're going to go after yours. I feel like that is team bonding. It sounds ridiculous maybe, but it sends a message that you guys are all in it together. And over the course of a long season, especially a pro sports season, though college football, I mean, it's getting longer, right? If you're in the college football playoff, now you're talking about maybe multiple extra games. But when pro sports seasons stretch on and on and on, and adversity, not to mention mental and physical exhaustion, is sure to hit, this is the kind of stuff that keeps a team together, is we're all in this, the three musketeers, right? All for one and one for all. And if one of us goes down, well, the rest of us are going to defend that dude, and we're going to make sure that we defend him when he can't defend himself. So I think it's interesting, some of the human dynamics at play, the emotions at play this weekend, and what was a very heated weekend on the football field primarily. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Glad to have you with us. We are starting our final hour here. You may be waking up for the first hour of your Tuesday. It's a Touchdown Tuesday. We're asking you to vote for TD of the week. So at Amy After Hours or at A-Law Radio. I know it's supposed to go up on our Facebook page. I swear I'll get it there as well. But you can have your answer ready. This portion of the show brought to you by... Oh, we already did that. We talked about Wesley Reed. Should we do it again? Just because last hour people might have missed when we highlighted Wesley Reed. Don't you dare bring that back.
One of the greats.
Winston Reed is actually a player on the Browns defense. And I wasn't sure who you were talking about. Does this put me in the Anchorman category? No, because you were in my ear, and I thought you were referring to a person.
At a bad time. I thought it was a natural break, and it wasn't, and that's what happens.
Pete is still getting to know my pauses, my pregnant pauses, and my seconds where I recollect.
I said it.
Where I recollect and then I also recollect.
I said it and then it was like, whoa, wait a minute. I should not have said it.
No, we should have just gone with it. How many people out there would have not known that Wesley Reed wasn't a person?
Wesley Reed sounds like a great musician. That would be a great musician name.
Yeah, but we could have pulled it off. I wonder if anyone would have found us online and said, hey, wait a minute, you've got the wrong name, thinking we were referring to the linebacker Winston Reed.
Well, someone is sitting there and analyzing every word that is said. So,
someone's got way too much time on his or her hands.
That's correct.
After Hours with Amy Lawrence, good morning. More than enough bang for your buck in Denver. On Monday night, wrapping up week 13, Broncos and Browns. Boy, did they put on a show. Here are just some of the numbers. Are you ready for this? And I know numbers don't tell the whole story, but they do provide a framework, especially for a game in which we had, 73 points? So we had the highest scoring NFL game of the season between the Steelers and the Bengals. And then we turn around and have a 73-point output collectively between the Broncos and the Browns. So don't ask me about the defense because I don't know. I know there were some really spectacular plays made by defenders on both sides of the ball, but ultimately this was decided, I think, by Jameis Winston. A significant impact for both teams, both the Browns and the Broncos. It was crazy. It was up and down the field. So here are some of the numbers. 29 total drives. Do you know there are routinely games in the NFL every weekend that have 15 total drives, 20 total drives? This one had 29 drives between the Broncos and the Browns, and that's because they were chucking and ducking, baby. 952 total yards, 11 plays that traveled at least 20 yards, so chunk plays, 11 of them. A 93-yarder, a 70-yarder, a 44-yarder, a 35-yarder. Just stop me if you've heard this before. We go on and on about the number of chunk plays in this game, which again makes me wonder what was going on with the defense. There were records set in this one. For instance, former Bronco receiver, current Brown wide receiver 1, Jerry Jeudy, 9 catches, 235 yards. Almost no one in the Broncos secondary could keep up with him. He also hauled in a touchdown. Oh, and he heard boos from his former fans there in Denver. That's odd.
I heard it.
What, I mean,
that was a lot of boos, huh?
It sounded like it.
What that means? That was a lot of catches, too.
I love that. That's the ultimate clap back. There were a lot of boos, huh? Well, I heard it. Yeah, there's a lot of catches, too. It's terrific.
That was a lot of catches, too.
That's amazing. A lot of dollar signs as well for Jerry Jeudy. So no one has ever had more receiving yards against his former team. Impressive performance for Jerry Jeudy. He wanted the win, of course, but he did have something reserved for the fans there in Denver. Now, you want to talk about records? Jameis Winston, a franchise record, 497 yards passing. That's never happened in Browns history. Probably doesn't surprise you considering the revolving door of quarterbacks going back to the start of this franchise. 497 yards passing, 4 touchdowns, but also 3 interceptions. And I really don't love the joke that you're going to hear over and over today, but you are going to hear it ad nauseum. Oh, wait, Jameis Winston actually threw 6 interceptions in this particular game.
Winston takes the snap. Protection is good with a 3-man rush. He throws the ball. It's intercepted. Intercepted 35. This is going to be a house call. Down the sideline. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. That is Nick Bonito. 71 yards as Nick Bonito with an interception return for a touchdown.
First and 10 is on 42. The shotgun snap, the short drop, the quick throw, far side. It's intercepted! Denver's intercepted in McMillan 40. Sideline 30. Down the sideline 20. 10. 5. Touchdown! It's a pick six! It's a Bronco pick six!
The Kudos second of the game. Oh, I'm sorry. I spoke over Jameis Winston.
Kudos to me.
Kudos to me.
That's a W.
Wait until you hear what he had to say about this propensity for throwing pick sixes. Let's be fair. Jameis Winston going back to Florida State has always had a love-hate relationship with interceptions. He can't have touchdowns without interceptions. You can't have one without the other. Very rarely do you get a game where Jameis Winston is chucking and ducking and not throwing picks. But there were three in this game, and Bo Nix had two of his own. And so I guess it's a clever line, but I don't know. It feels like a hot take you're going to hear all day on Tuesday about how he threw six interceptions. So whatevs. Let's be a little more creative than that. He did certainly move the football, and I do believe that Jameis has juiced up the Browns' offense. There's a whole lot of pizzazz in it now. It moves. They put points on the board. They put points on the other team's board. At least they're going somewhere. It was stale. It was boring. It was slow. It was plodding. It was ineffective. It was awful to watch when Jameis Winston wasn't the quarterback and Deshaun Watson was. So at least now you're getting up and down the field. If you're the Browns, that's something. And I'm wondering, did Jameis Winston or has Jameis Winston earned a chance to be a starting quarterback in the NFL again? We kind of went through the teams. We've taken a bunch of your calls, 855-212-4227, also on our Facebook page. Now, there's a chance that the Browns will learn from last year. Remember, there was a groundswell for them to keep Joe Flacco, re-sign Joe Flacco in the offseason because he helped to lead them to the playoffs. With all the losses, all the injuries, everything else that happened with the team, Joe Flacco provided some veteran stability. We know what he is. He's not Patrick Mahomes. You know what you get with Joe Flacco. Not quite as many interceptions as what you get with Jameis Winston. Well, here's Jameis Winston, who's injected some life into this offense. Nick Chubb is back. That's great as well. He's already got a great rapport with Jerry Jeudy, but also David Njoku. How many big plays did he have last night? And so I do think that the Browns should consider re-signing him in the offseason, maybe making him QB1 because you've invested in him already, especially if we don't see any change in the coaching staff, which I don't know why we would. This is not Kevin Stefanski's fault. So we'll see what happens with the Browns. But the Jets, the Giants likely looking for quarterbacks, and maybe the Giants draft one. But what does that mean for some of the other teams out there? I've even heard the rumblings, Producer Pete, that the Jags could be interested in trading Trevor Lawrence. I don't know that I would do that if I were the Jags. I feel like you're about to rip everything up at the seams and start all over again. But Trevor Lawrence is the type of piece you build around. I know he's had some tough injuries. I don't love the idea of starting all over again fresh.
That's a hard conclusion to make now because you don't know what the system's going to be. You don't know who is going to be possibly running the football operations, let alone be the coach.
But where are you going to get a better quarterback in Jacksonville than Trevor Lawrence?
I agree with that. I would not trade him. But you might have somebody that comes in and says, hey, I have someone in free agency. I have someone that I want to draft, and I want to start building around that person rather than continuing a project that I wasn't involved in.
That's true. A lot of general managers or new administrations, if you will, applies in sports too, they want their own people. It's just that the question becomes, if not the devil you know, it's the devil you don't know. So who is the devil you don't know?
Right.
I mean, Trevor Lawrence has been in your system. He's got familiarity with the people around him. Even if the coaches change, he's very coachable. He wants so badly to win. He's got a skill set that's terrific. We know that, though it can be wild at times. But there's been such a tumultuous tenure for him there. I don't know where you get a quarterback who's better than him. You look around. Even if they do end up drafting number one overall, do they really want to start over with Shedeur Sanders? Is Shedeur Sanders better than Trevor Lawrence, who has multiple years under his belt?
I don't think so. I would be one of those teams that would want to trade for Trevor Lawrence because I think in the right system, in a stable system, in a system that has worked, I think he could be what we thought he would be when he got drafted.
Yeah, and for a while that worked with Doug Peterson, who's a Super Bowl winning coach and a quarterback himself, also was the quarterback's coach with the Eagles when... with Nick Foles, he was the coach. But remember, he was the quarterback's coach before that as they were making the changes. Under the Andy Reid, I mean, he's been Andy Reid's system, which means he's quality. I get that he's probably not going to survive this. I just don't know what you benefit by starting over, but we'll see. So there are different places where quarterbacks, a veteran quarterback could be a stopgap. Has Jameis Winston earned the right to be considered? Though maybe Sam Darnold is also available and gets paid this offseason. That's a question, Pete. Would you rather have Sam Darnold or Jameis Winston if you were looking for a veteran QB? Ooh, well, exactly. Those are your options, maybe Joe Flacco plays another year. But again, we know what Joe Flacco is. Cinder blocks for feet, essentially, so he's going to be a pocket passer.
I would say for the money, you probably have to pay Sam Darnold. I would go with Jameis.
Would you? But not long-term deal.
No. I was a big fan. I was not in favor of the Jets trading Sam Darnold to go with Zach Wilson. I was not in favor of that whole project.
Yeah, that was a mess.
And look what happened. I was right. First time ever. In any of these predictions where I was right. But I think Sam Darnold can is a good manager. He's a good manager of a team. But Jameis can give you that dynamic game like today, but also lose that type of game.
Right. He's got a live arm.
Right.
But he has interceptions on the last two possessions, including, I mean, he had a pair of pick sixes, but the last pick is in the end zone. And that there's your game hanging in the balance. And I'm not saying it's all on him. They're not in this position if he doesn't do what he does with the 500 passing yards. But yeah, you always have to be buckled up with Jameis Winston because there will be interceptions. It's just a matter of when. But, and you hope they're not as damaging as they were last night.
It's just depending upon the scenario and what type of team is going to take on one of these quarterbacks and how much can you pay them. So it's a little tricky. If it was a straight shoot, then I would go with Jameis probably. Short term.
I'll say that Trevor Lawrence stays in Jacksonville. I don't think they want to switch that part. And I think when he's healthy and the team around him is solid, then he's still the best option.
He should. But I like I said before, if they decide to not only get rid of Doug Peterson, they get rid of Trent Baalke, then you could have a whole new regime coming in from top to bottom, and that's where the questions come into play.
Didn't we hear Shad Khan, or didn't we hear from him that Trent Baalke was keeping his gig?
It's been talked about that he would stay.
All right, let's see. Let's see what happens. At A-Law Radio if you want to weigh in. Also on our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. Coming up, while we're talking about Trevor Lawrence, he's in concussion protocol, obviously. And D'Amico Ryans coming to the defense of his linebacker, Azeez Al-Shaair, even as...
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jaguars are still fuming over the way that Al-Shaair took out Trevor Lawrence. And I think there's a lot of controversy around what D'Amico's saying. But please listen, because he played the position. He was a great defender his time in the NFL, and he's widely respected. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Second down 7 after the 3-yard gain. Jags at their own 49-yard line, moving right to left. Trailing 6-0 to the Houston Texans. Under center is Trevor. Play fake. Rolling to his left, looking downfield. Trevor's looking. He wants to run it to midfield. Slides it. Oh, he got drilled. What in the world? He absolutely got drilled, and there's a melee, and I don't blame him. He slid to the ground. He's still on the ground. That's about as cheap a shot as you'll ever see in the NFL.
It's a brawl. It's a flat-out brawl. And Evan Engram went at the linebacker. The linebacker, Azeez Al-Shaair, hits Trevor Lawrence as he's going feet first down to the ground. And I think Trevor got KO'd.
I mean, he is still on the ground. What a cheap shot that was.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The calls from Frank Frangie and company on the Jaguars radio network. I have watched this video so many times. I've obviously never played linebacker in the NFL. I've never been in the situation that Azeez Al-Shaair was in. I've never been in the situation that Trevor Lawrence was in. But in watching it over and over, as much as football moves so fast, these guys are world-class athletes and they are trained. They understand that you can't be targeting a player's head and neck. As Trevor Lawrence starts to slide, now he's kind of a taller dude, right? He starts to slide. Azeez is coming in. It's not like it was one of those where Trevor drops down at the last second and Azeez hits him. Nah, he was down. He was on the ground. And yes, was his head up? Yeah, because he's sliding like you would slide into second base. But Azeez comes in with his forearm. Why are you coming in with your forearm? You're not even trying to wrap up. It'd be different if you thought you were going for his midsection. He tried to slide and you end up grabbing him around the neck. Okay, I'm using the tackle motion even right now as I'm sitting here in my studio. He wasn't trying to wrap him up and make sure he didn't gain another yard. No, instead, he went in with a forearm and smacked him right in the face. I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy tackle with his forearm, leading with his forearm, especially when a guy is down on the ground and Azeez was down. He was pointed. His body trajectory was headed down to the ground with Trevor Lawrence. So I don't know that the forearm shiver is one that you can defend, but he did apologize on social media, of course, saying he never intended to hurt Trevor Lawrence. He got ejected, more than likely going to get fined by the NFL. And now his coach, D'Amico Ryan's answering questions. Now remember, D'Amico himself was a Pro Bowl defender in the NFL.
Unfortunately, hit on the quarterback. But it's also, it's twofold, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the quarterbacks in this day and age, they try to take advantage of the rule where they slide late and they try to get an extra yard. And now you're a defender, a lot of onus is on the defender, right? Whether it's on the sideline or where it's on the quarterback, you don't know what a guy is thinking. You don't know if a guy is standing up and he's continuing to run. You don't know. And then you get a late slide and you hit the guy. Unfortunate that Trevor got hurt. We want hope Trevor is okay, but it's also if we're sliding, we have to get down. If we're getting out of bounds, we get out of bounds, and that rule is there to protect the quarterbacks, and we want our quarterbacks to be safe in the league, so we just have to be safe. If we're sliding, make sure we're keeping our heads down.
In concept, what D'Amico is saying rings true, and he's right. The onus becomes the defenders. And the defender is expected to prevent any type of dangerous hit. Now, sometimes at full speed, that's not impossible, but unlikely, improbable. How do you stop yourself in midair? There are times when I've been on the side of the defender. And I think in concept, what he's saying is true. But in this particular case, this was a violent blow leading with a forearm, and the quarterback gave himself up. It's not like this was running full speed, drop down. No, this wasn't some kid's game where you get to the goal and you've avoided getting tagged. Nah, this was Trevor Lawrence running, but sliding feet first. He was fully extended, meaning that the entire length of his body was down on the ground. His head probably was going down, but at that point, he's sliding just like you would if you were sliding into second base. This was a violent blow. And I do think it could have been prevented. But at the very least, even if he hits him, why are you leading with your forearm and smacking him across the head? But D'Amico Ryan's is pointing out that the quarterbacks also need to abide by the rule. Don't take advantage of the rule, drop at the last second, and pretend like a defender had all the time in the world to stop. when you're getting out of bounds, get out of bounds, because that's what the rule is for. Don't take a late hit out of bounds because you waited to the last second and then the defender thinks that you're not actually going out of bounds. So because of the speed of the game, I understand quarterbacks need to be abiding by the rule too, and that's what he's saying. I agree with him in concept. And as I say, Al Shire did apologize on social, genuinely. He even actually tells the story of how the two of them spoke before the game, and that Aziz complimented Trevor and told him how great it was to see him on the field. So I do believe this is out of character for him, maybe, but in that moment, it looked deliberate. It was violent. Now, interesting that D'Amico goes on to criticize the Jaguars' reaction.
The entire thing is, you know, Aziz hits the guy, but their sideline overreacts, and it turns out and turns into a melee. It wasn't our guys. It's their team overreacted, pushed our guy, dragging our guy to the sideline. So that's uncalled for on that side. We have to be better on the sidelines as well with both teams.
Now, I'm not saying that this is within the rules, because it's not, but I disagree with D'Amico Ryans that it was, quote, uncalled for. Oh, I think it was called for. And as I was saying earlier this hour, if you as a member of the Jaguars, especially if you're standing right there and you see it, and you're also a defender and you're expected to abide by the rules with CJ Stroud, I can imagine that D'Amico Ryans might say something different if this was CJ Stroud, right? You got to protect your guy. If we watch CJ take a hit like this, I can imagine the Texans players on the field would have to defend their quarterback and would feel justified in doing so. The melee, for sure, it got out of hand, and the NFL is well within its rights and its rules to go and suspend anybody who threw a punch. Guys were ejected on the Jaguars as well. But after you watch your quarterback get knocked the bleep out, heck no, it was not uncalled for. It was called for. There's unwritten rules here. There's etiquette. If you're a rookie, you better know your place is to defend your star quarterback. We don't need anyone to get hurt. I mean, sometimes that happens in brawls. But this was absolutely called for. And had the roles been reversed, I am 100% certain the Texans would have responded the exact same way, especially because it happened right there in front of all of them. I respect D'Amico. I think he's terrific. Obviously, he's got a bright future in coaching. The Texans are headed in the right direction. And yes, in concept, the quarterbacks need to be abiding by the rules as well. The reaction, the retaliation, oh, it was called for. I think you ask most athletes in any sport, you go after our star guy, we're going to make sure you know that's unacceptable and we're not going to stand for it. That seems pretty called for to me. And I would say common knowledge as well. At A-Law Radio, by the way, did you hear the ridiculous potential, I'm going to say potential, rule change that Rob Manfred is floating out there now? I swear he's doing it just to troll us. Plus a little more from the college football weekend as we get ready for the next set of college football playoff rankings. Also, Jaden Daniels, he was in college not that long ago, and he is right now potential rookie of the year award winner. There's a lot we can sprinkle in the final hour, or final, we're in the final hour, final few minutes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, well, plenty of offensive fireworks, but it was a few defensive plays that made all the difference.
Winston takes the snap. Protection is good with a three-man rush. He throws the ball. It's intercepted. Intercepted 35. This is going to be a house call. Down the sideline. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. That is Nick Bonito. 71 yards as Nick Bonito with an interception return for a touchdown.
Call courtesy of the Broncos Radio Network. First of two touchdowns for the Broncos on defense. They picked off Jameis Winston three times in all. Also allowed him to throw for 497 yards and four touchdowns. The Broncos able to survive the Browns 41-32.
Holy cow. You know, there's some games go maybe in a direction you think they're going to go. Obviously, that one went in a much different direction. We did enough, made enough plays in the end to win, so I'll just take questions.
That's head coach Sean Payton as Jerry Jeudy had 235 yards receiving and a score against his former club. A Bo Nix threw for 294 and a touchdown. Broncos now 8-5. Bears keeping GM Ryan Poles in place. He'll begin the process of finding a new head coach. 49ers lost a pair of running backs to IR. Christian McCaffrey, a PCL injury in his knee. His backup, Jordan Mason, also goes to IR with a high ankle sprain. Head coach Kyle Shanahan trying to keep the team afloat with all the injuries, but realizes just how difficult a season it's been for McCaffrey.
You know, it was a real frustrating year for him. He worked his ass off to get back to this point, and I think he was really feeling good and about to take off, and just had that real unfortunate injury last night. So I know he's as crushed as anyone, but he'll get through this. He's a hell of a player, hell of a person, and an unbelievable 49er.
Elsewhere, the Saints lost Taysom Hill to a torn ACL. His season is done, while the Rams claimed former 2023 first-round pick corner Emmanuel Forbes Jr. off waivers from Washington. NBA, the T-Wolves rocked the Lakers 109-80. Rudy Gobert, 17 points, 12 boards. Celtics rolled the Heat 108-89. Hawks outscored the Pelicans 124-112. The Bulls disposed of the Nets 128-102. In hockey, the Stars double up Utah 2-1. Devils pound the Rangers 5-1, while the Maple Leafs overpowered the Blackhawks 4-1. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, sports fans, Andrew Perloff here on the Infinity Sports Network. Check us out 24/7 on SiriusXM Channel 158.
Winston looks right. He throws a pass. It's intercepted. Picked off on the near side. Down the sideline. Benito. 50. 40. Down the near side. Foot race. 30. 20. 10. 5. Touchdown. Touchdown, Nick Benito. A pick six by Jameis Winston. It was returned 75 yards.
In times like this, you know, that's is. It's an opportunity to continue to glorify the Lord even through the toughest circumstances. I know I'm better than this. I know. I'm just praying for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes. Like, that's not me. Like, a phenomenal game. Offense, do some great things. But I mess it up.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm going to assume that's his dry sense of humor. I know that he's very serious about his faith, and he mentions God in all of his press conferences and interviews. And I know that he's serious about blaming himself, because that was really the theme of his post-game comments after Monday Night Football. But I'm going to pray for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes is amazing. It's like praying for the Lord to deliver you from a demon of some sort. I'm going to pray for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes. Could you imagine if we had a preacher who stood up in a... Now, so my pastor is a huge Giants fan, which means he's constantly bashing the Giants. Whenever he makes a sports analogy or whenever he talks about church running long, well, it's not like you need to run home and watch the Giants. So he loves the Giants, but he hates the Giants. And I think as long as I've been in the church, which is now like eight, nine years, he's always had a team to bash. Anyway, he makes those analogies and he'll rip them because that's his team. In the case of Jameis Winston, I hope he's having a dry sense of humor and kind of joking about the fact that he needs to be delivered from pick sixes.
Hey, I'm just praying for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes.
Am I the only one who finds that highly amusing? That is absolutely something. A Hall of Fame candidate. We're bringing that back. The thing is, he says it with a straight face, but I still think he's being somewhat sarcastic. He's kind of deprecating, self-deprecating.
I hope so.
I'm going to pray for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes. Because you don't hear him change tone of voice at all. So that's what I mean about the dry humor. I actually need to go back and see if I can figure out what the reaction was inside the press room. It didn't sound like people laughed. So
sounds like a look up type move.
Oh, man. That's amazing.
I'm just praying for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes.
I mean, he doesn't laugh, but I have to. A franchise record, 497 yards passing and four touchdowns, but three picks. Absolutely. Now, where do The defense has come in. Those interceptions, they were humongous. 14 points scored by the defense. And one defensive player of the week who stands out. He's sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. You heard his name with Kevin Harlan there on Westwood One. Nick Benito, the linebacker, has just accomplished a feat that only Von Miller has ever done in a Broncos uniform, and that is a touchdown and a sack in the same game. Look at you, Nick Benito. And what a stat line for him. He had one tackle, okay, so one tackle, but one sack, two passes defensed, two quarterback hits, and a touchdown. That's pretty sweet. Good
That's
for
a
you.
Line.
I'm thinking game ball as well as the defensive player of the week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. When I was counting up the number of plays that traveled at least 20 yards, I did in fact count the ones on the defensive side of the ball. This was one heck of a way to put an exclamation point on the final game of week 13. Can you believe it? We've only got 6 weeks to go, 14, 15, 16, 17. Oh, 5 weeks to go because they go through 18, right? Duh. I'm in here counting on my fingers. This is what happens when you get to the final few minutes of the show.
I do it too.
14, 15, 16, 17, 18. How is that possible? How is that possible?
I have a question.
Yes.
All right, 5 weeks in the NFL.
Regular season.
Yes. How many more coaches get fired during that 5 weeks?
Before the end of the regular season?
Yes. Not counting Black Monday.
So not counting when the games are done.
Yeah.
I'll say one more.
Okay.
Except I don't know where. My money might be on Antonio Pierce, but maybe not. But because I'm not sure if Mark Davis is going to make another change. I just don't think Antonio Pierce is the right dude for the job. But I also know he hasn't had a quarterback. So how is it on him? Jacksonville, I could see them making a move before the end of the season. Even though Shad Khan did deliver the dreaded vote of confidence earlier in the year.
Well, that's the sign it's coming.
Where else? I honestly don't think Tennessee makes a change, though I know some people think that might happen there. I don't think Cincinnati does either, because I think Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow have a terrific relationship. Zach, by the way, he's going full self-accountability as well based on the Bengals' inability to win these close games.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and put this on the players. You know, as a head coach, you sit there and you're 4-8. You're a 4-8 head coach, and that starts with you. And to get the most out of everybody, that's my job. And I don't take that lightly.
I don't know that. It's hard to evaluate a coach when your star quarterback is gone for what half the time he's been there. At the same time, they finished with a record above 500 last year in the toughest division in football with Jake Browning as their starting QB. I say he gets another year at least.
But the big microscope is on him now because,
yes.
Because these guys came into when they were losing in the start of the season, it was all about, oh, well, we start slow. I mean,
they do start slow.
You can't really go.
But they didn't dig out of this hole.
Right. You have to, if you're going to start slow, you got to dig out of the hole. And that can't always be the excuse.
Mm.
I mean,
agreed.
You have a quarterback there. Come on.
Agreed. I agree with that. And I would say, too, that there's some of this envy, right? The grass is greener on the other side. You look at the teams that have hired first year head coaches, like Dan Quinn, for instance. I err on the side of guys who've got the experience. He did. He had it in Atlanta. It didn't go well. He spent some time in Dallas. Now he's running the Commanders. And look, he's got the tools that he needs, both on the field and in the locker room. And Jaden Daniels, he was talking about just the message from Dan Quinn as they were getting ready for the most recent game, trying to end their losing skid.
Go out there, keep preparing how we prepare. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to go out there. We got to make plays. We got to be able to finish. And then from there, you know, obviously we take care of business, and that's kind of what they preach. And obviously just sacrificing whatever for the team, for the betterment of the team.
These are basic messages, fundamentals, and Dan Quinn did say they have to stay consistent. Even during their three-game losing skid, they had to stay consistent because it was dark, it was painful, but this is where a lot of the learning takes place and kind of coming together and figuring it out. A little more with Jaden Daniels on our next show, but he was a guest on Sirius XM NFL Radio, so got to hear more from the Commanders QB. Yeah, if we're talking about the rookies that were experiencing college last year, I wonder how many of them wish that they had been part of the college football playoff that was a 12-team bracket. There's going to be some chaos. It's championship weekend coming up, but think about what we saw this past weekend. Georgia needed 8 overtimes to beat Georgia Tech. Michigan was a 3-touchdown underdog and still extended its losing streak over Ohio State. And so now you've got Ryan Day on the hot seat. How about the second South Carolina coach in the past 40 years to win 9 regular season games because Shane Beamer and his Gamecocks were able to rally past Clemson. Notre Dame is sitting pretty when it comes to the college football playoff. I think it's awesome what we're getting in college football. I just wonder, when is enough enough? Will 12 be enough? We'll see the rankings tonight. Talk to you then. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!